stop, rebound, they score! Hendrik Sedin with 2 minutes to go, and the Canucks have tied the game at four.
Horvat gets a step, headed for the net against Burns. Bo Horvat scores! What a spectacular goal by Bo Horvat.
With our first selection, we select from the WHL Calgary Hitmen, Jake Virtanen.
This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Now, here's Chris, Clay, Matt, and Adam. These guys really need some nicknames.
Episode 89 of the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, otherwise known as the Alexander McGillney episode. Matt Lee at MattLee980 with you here in the host chair. Joining me behind the glass, Adam Ovenell-Carter, back by popular demand at Adam FOC. The kid's running the show today, Adam.
Yeah, as it should be.
As it should be. Jake Virtanen and Bo Horvat are in studio. Derek Dorsett or Brandon Prust and Chris Higgins are out in Utica. That is Chris and Clay.
Who's Bo? Who's Jake?
I don't know. You are a little taller, and I feel like I'm a little thicker like Bo Horvat. So how about we say you're Jake Virtanen, because you're younger, too.
I'll take it.
And I'll be Bo Horvat. Sounds good, right?
Yeah, sure.
Which of Clay and Chris are Prust and Higgins?
Oh, God. Doesn't matter?
I want to say Chris would be Prust.
Yeah, I feel like...
Because Clay is certainly a lover, not a fighter.
Exactly, yeah.
And I don't know. Both equally useless, though. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you, Matt?
You know, it's been a long time since you were on the show. You were so inconsolable. You couldn't even join us on the post-trade deadline podcast.
No, yeah, that was a tough one. That was a tough day for Adam.
I kind of wanted to call you and just give you a hug through the phone because you seemed so distraught at the time.
I think you read what I sent you. I can't remember being so angry.
They should have got at least something for Hamus. Are you in that sort of category of fans who said something would have been better than nothing?
To some extent. I mean, I understand why you can't give him away for a third round pick because you do that once.
Was it like politics in your mind that they didn't do it?
I think they could have got a deal done early and got a heck of a lot more in return, but they chose to wait it out and...
Waited too long.
Yeah.
What was your opinion? I mean, we will get into actual hockey in a moment here, but what was your opinion on the possible belief that the Aquilinis may have been involved in all the politics going on?
Well, I mean, we've been talking about them getting involved and overstepping for ages now, so it's really nothing new.
Yeah, I guess so. That's true. It's all true. Coming up, though, on the show, lots to talk about. We will focus largely on the kids, it being the kids' show. Of course, Nikita Tramkin in town. He's been showcasing himself around UBC at practice. We don't know when he's going to get into a game. We're hopeful it's sooner rather than later. Anton Rodin winning the Swedish Hockey League MVP honors earlier this weekend as well. Sounds like he's coming back to Vancouver. We'll get into what kind of an impact both of those players could make to the Canucks lineup. Elsewhere, though, on the ice, the results that matter. The Canucks somehow, Adam, winning games. They've won 3 of their last 4, if you can believe it.
I can, and it's
and 2 of those wins were against San Jose and Nashville, teams that are in playoff position.
I know. You and I took a look at the schedule and looked at games we thought Vancouver would lose, and we highlighted those at 2. We were hoping they would lose, and here we are. They won 2 of the. Tougher games.
I think nobody here expected the Canucks to defeat the Kings on the road earlier last week.
No, that was the biggest surprise.
Which they didn't.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they defeated Arizona midweek. And then, of course, on the weekend, defeating Arizona. They will be back in action tonight, though, against the Winnipeg Jets. A big game for Team Tank here. A very big game for Team Tank.
Yeah, I'll be going to the game.
Oh, are you going to the game?
I am going
right
to the
on,
game.
Right on, right on. We will get into Team Tank as well, see how that's been going. We'll also look at the draft. Both Adam and myself are draft enthusiasts. So if the draft were to be held today, we'd look at who the Canucks would sort of prioritize in terms of picking in their current spot. Get into all that coming up right here on the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Man, how do they win these games?
I don't know. They keep finding a way.
I didn't watch the whole game over the weekend against Nashville, but the kids are certainly playing a role in this one, Adam. Did you watch the game?
No, I was working, but okay. I was checking my phone. Don't tell my boss. But I saw the Canucks went up 2-0, and then I see it's 2-1. I'm like, all right, here we go. Nashville's coming back. Then it's 3-1. Then it's 3-2. Then it's 4-2 again. Like, they just can't let it go.
Yeah.
You know? And the game against Arizona, my goodness, down 2-0 in a critical tank game, and they blow it.
Yeah. I mean, well, if you look at 3 of the 4 goals the Canucks put up against Nashville, at least you take some sort of solace in the fact that it's the kids playing a big role in generating those opportunities. The first goal, a Sven Berchi play, started off by Ben Hutton, who picked up his 22nd assist of the season. We'll talk about Ben Hutton in a little bit. Derek Dorsett's goal getting set up by a Bo Horvat opportunity in front. And later on, Bo Horvat tallying and one of his own hits, his 11th goal of the season. And of course, there was the empty netter where the Sedins teamed up with Radim Vrbata in the dying moment. So, Adam, quickly, Sven Berchi, we've talked about this at length, but is he for real? He's got 14 goals on the season. Is he a mainstay on your mind on the Canucks next season?
Oh, without question. I think he's more than proven himself this year.
It's almost hard to believe that he was a healthy scratch, I believe, to start the season, wasn't he?
I can't remember. I feel like he was on and off, but then once he finally got going with Bo, and, you know, they've been separated and moved around the lineup, but he's still been able to produce numbers for the majority of the season.
Yeah, and you and I have talked off the air as well about where you sort of land on giving Sven Berchi his next contract. He will be an RFA at season's end. He's got 26 points in 59 games. 14 of them are goals. The chemistry certainly there with Bo Horvat throughout the season. What would you sort of be ballparking for Sven Berchi in his next contract?
I'm thinking one of those Mason Raymond deals.
Yeah.
You know, the 2-year, five, something like that.
Yeah, I dropped that comparison as well last week, so you're sort of in that same boat.
Yeah, I would think so.
All right, well, fair enough. Elsewhere, though, Jake Virtanen getting an opportunity with the Sedin Twins to start this game as well. 1 minute into this one, he finishes a check on Mike Ribeiro. Philip Forsberg jumps into the fray. He drops the gloves with Forsberg. He fed him a couple rights as well. Is this a new Jake Virtanen we've been seeing? We've seen a lot on the reports about how this is not the same Jake Virtanen that the Canucks lent to Team Canada at the World Juniors.
Yeah, he's been kind of a completely different player since he's been back. More confident. The first game he was back, you could see he was more confident in himself. You know, he's finally producing, getting in the forecheck more than he had. It's nice to see.
Where do you land with how you feel about his rookie season as a whole? Because as you and I have talked about, the numbers haven't exactly been there. He's played 42 games. He's only got 6 goals and 6 assists for 12 points. Surely by just looking at the numbers, they're not quite there for a good rookie season. But is it the little things he's been doing in the games with regards to finishing hits, being a smart player? He's been actually pretty good defensively as well. Are those little things able to outweigh the lack of production from Jake Virtanen?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you take a look at Bo's rookie season last year. He started off super slow and came on super strong. And I don't think Jake's put up the same numbers that Bo has in the latter half of the season, or Bo did. But you see the progression. And when he was on that line with Berchi and Horvat, they were creating chances at a crazy rate, even if they weren't capitalizing. And he's still been able to do that as he's been bounced around the lineup. So even though he's not getting the numbers, you see a lot of promise.
Going forward, hindsight being 2020, would you have done the same thing with Jake Virtanen as the Canucks have done all season? Or would you have preferred to have sent him back to Calgary in the WHL?
It's interesting because I think he'd done as much as he could in Calgary. You know, he's almost too big for that league. It's one of those fine balances, you know, tough balancing act. I think they've done fine by him. We've seen that he can handle the NHL game now, so I don't think there's any regrets.
Going forward, do you think that there's any possibility for him to experience that sort of sophomore slump that we saw a little bit from Bo Horvat this season?
Maybe. They're different players, and I think they're asked to do different things. Bo was almost asked to be the second-line center right at the beginning of the season.
Virtanen, with mixed results, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And Virtanen, you know, the numbers aren't there, and he doesn't have to be that leader that Bo does or Bo is expected to be. So I think I wouldn't expect a huge sophomore slump, but it's certainly possible.
One thing that you and I have often talked about since the day Jake Virtanen was drafted is about if we could have redone the NHL draft in 2014, where would you have drafted Virtanen? Of course, the Canucks taking Virtanen 6th overall. It was Jim Benning's first pick as the Canucks general manager at the time. This is the draft where Aaron Ekblad, Sam Reinhart, Leon Draisaitl, Sam Bennett, Michael Dal Colle, all went before Virtanen in the draft. Later on, we saw the likes of Willie Nylander, Nikolai Ehlers, who especially has been stepping up to the plate, Dylan Larkin, Robbie Fabry as well. Where would Jake Virtanen land in a redraft of the 2014 draft.
Without having it in front of me,
yeah.
You'd still have to think top 15, top 20.
I'd still
20,
say top 10.
Top 10, you think?
Yeah, I mean, looking at the company he's in, it looks like only 9 other players are... No, it looks like only 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, 9 other players have played more games than Jake Virtanen in the NHL.
Who would those be?
It would be Ekblad, Reinhardt, Dreisaitl, Bennett, Ehlers, Larkin, Fabry, Pasternak. Oh, and McKinnon, if you threw him in.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Nylander's a tough one. I don't know if I would take Jake or...
I mean, that
Nylander.
Seemed to be the most contentious one, the three of them. Virtanen, Nylander, and Ehlers.
Well, I would take Ehlers in a heartbeat, I think.
You think so?
At 6, if we could redo it.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, I would take Virtanen over Dal Colle right now.
Oh, Dal Colle. I mean, Dal Colle might be bordering on bust. I mean, I might live to regret that statement a year or two from now. But if you look at him, his numbers have not been good in the OHL since he's been returned.
No.
He didn't even make Team Canada at the World Juniors.
Yeah, that was a big surprise.
So if that happens, there's got to be a red flag there. So I still think Jake Virtanen goes in the top 10 of the 2014 draft if he had to do it all over again. But certainly having Ehlers out there, hindsight being 2020, you'd consider taking him there. I don't know. It's food for thought. Right?
It's an interesting discussion.
Other recent performances, at least on the score sheet for the Vancouver Canucks, we've seen Berchi, we've seen Virtanen jump to the forefront. Where have you sort of sat where have you sat on Marcus Granlund? Of course, he scored the overtime winner against Arizona earlier last week. Since he's been here, a lot of attention on him, seeing as how it was Hunter Shinkarik that went the other way for him. Do you think Granlund is a fixture on this team next season as well?
Well, I think he will be because he's a guy Benning brought in. But I just haven't seen enough of him. You know, he's only played a handful of games and I haven't watched all of them. So I can't really commit yet to anything.
What's the ceiling, though, do you think, on Granlund? Like, can he be a top two center, or does he sort of bottom out as a top three center?
I think he could be a decent middle six player. I don't ever see him being a first-line guy.
Yeah. Like, do you think 30 to 35 points is probably his limit?
I think if you get that out of him consistently, you get 40 points out of him every year, then you're probably happy. I mean, obviously, you can't really judge the deal until we see what becomes of Shinkarik.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at Granlund in a vacuum, I think those numbers would be perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, all right. Emerson Edom sort of wavering a little bit lately. The ice time has been going down. He's sort of hanging steady at around 13 and a half minutes, but at one point earlier last week against San Jose, he was playing as much as 19. Pointless in his last 5 games after getting close to scoring a hat trick earlier. Are you sort of going to let Emerson Edom play out the season and then you'll revisit it? Or can you see him being a guy that the Canucks rely on as well as a top 9 player next season?
I think he's going to be a solid role player. And again, I think they bring him back on a kind of prove a deal, same kind of thing as we're talking about with Berchi, maybe a little less money. But Benning clearly brought him in for a reason, so I don't see why he wouldn't be there next year.
Yeah, fair enough. Lyndon Vay, where do you stand very quickly on him?
You know, I'm still not sold. Just getting every opportunity to succeed, and for the most part, he kind of has. But I think he's been gifted a lot of chances. I'm not really one to criticize him too much because I think he's improved drastically over last year. So I'm still kind of waiting to see with Vay.
Do you remember this conversation? And we talked about this on the podcast last week with Chris and Clay. Is I had boldly suggested Ben Hutton would be a threat to score 30 points this season. Do you remember this conversation?
Was it 30 or 35?
I'm pretty sure it was 30.
We have faux writing on this, so we should go find that.
I'm pretty sure it was 30.
Okay. Well, he's at 23, so.
Are you freaking out a little bit?
No.
You don't think he can get 30?
I think he can.
Yeah. You don't think he will, though?
I don't know. The way he's been playing lately.
He's got 4 points in his last 5.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been playing really well.
And there's about 10 to 12 games left on the season.
Well, I mean, he's not going to score a...
He's not going to score a point per game
rate,
clip.
Right? Yeah.
But I think you can safely... No, not safely, perhaps. But you can suggest he's a bet to get, what, 0.4 points per game the rest of the way?
Okay, so say even in half his games, there's 12 games left, that's... That's 6 points.
5 or 6 points. It's going to be close.
I know. I think I'm getting fed on this one, but
We'll see. But Ben Hutton obviously playing really well right now. He's getting about 22 to 23 minutes a night over the last stretch of games. Again, 23 points on the season. What is the ceiling for Ben Hutton? Can he be a top two guy?
I think you can. I mean, he already is on a bad team, granted, but he's already a top four guy, and I think he would be on a lot of teams. You know, he's been asked to shut down big name players, and as he's been vaulted to the top of the depth chart with all these injuries, and I think he's held his own. The numbers are great, obviously, and the way he, the way he can move the puck quickly and calmly. You look at the series against Calgary last year and how Vancouver was just dominated in their own zone with the Calgary forecheck because they couldn't move the puck fast or calmly, right? And I think Hutton kind of excels at that. So I think he's a really valuable piece moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, this is one argument that you might be able to make, and I don't know how much stock you put into it, but a lot of Hutton's points over the season have come since garbage time, quote-unquote, was put together, which was maybe at the start of February. I mean, I'm counting it right now as we speak, and he has 10 points since the beginning of February, which accounts for half his production. You know, in that large stretch of quote-unquote critical games in January and December, not so much. So is it easy for Ben Hutton to be putting up this kind of production when he's getting this opportunity, he's getting the minutes, and he's in a low-pressure situation, whereas maybe you might not see this in a October, November, December kind of run?
Well, maybe, but I think, you know, we've been talking about the good play of all the kids lately, and that's just because they've been given a chance to play. And obviously, you're playing more, you're probably going to put up more points. But I think just with the opportunity, you know, it's not like he's been given the minutes and floundered. He's been given the minutes, yep, and the opportunity and done very well.
Certainly. I mean, do you see then Ben Hutton carrying this sort of top four role into next season? I mean, what does the blue line look for you next season? You got Edler and Tanev seem to be the locks to return.
Yeah.
Tanev especially. Edler maybe a little less so. But Tanev definitely, it seems to be a lock to return. Ham Hughes maybe.
Well,
that could be pushing it.
Can you pull up who they have signed for next year?
Well, they definitely have Spezza signed. since you know that.
But seriously, you got Edler, Tanev, Spezza, Hutton probably is the top four lock.
Sure.
And then after that, it gets a little murky.
Well, I'm assuming here Barkowski is let go.
Yeah.
That's, I'm hoping, is a guarantee. Biega is under contract for next season as well. I believe that's a one-way deal. What else do we got here? Those seem to be the only ones that are supposed to return next season, which would be Edler, Tanev, Spezza, Hutton, Biega.
But then you've got Pedan, Trampkin.
Yeah, that's right.
Larson.
Yeah, Larson could be coming in next season as well. I mean, suddenly you have seven defensemen, and you're not even accounting the fact that Dan Hamhuis could be returning in a hometown discount deal.
That's a horrible defensive core.
Yeah. There's Adam just rubbing his eyes like, oh, we have to watch another season of this next season. There's no Barkowski.
I know, which is almost too bad if you're in the tank group, but yeah, it's going to be tough.
Okay, but looking at that defense, obviously Ben Hutton is a lock for a top four. Is he like the number three defenseman in that list of names?
For any sane person, yeah.
Sane person.
For Benning and co, you'd probably maybe put him as the fourth behind Spezza. But yeah, I think he's easily in the top four there. He's been, you know, with Edler out, he's been the Canucks' second best defenseman.
Right now, who do you have him? Do you have him ahead or behind Dan Hamhuis on the depth chart if you had to rank the two?
That's a good question.
I mean, Ham Hughes has been very steady as of late since he's a return to the lineup. But you've mentioned, you can't ignore the two-way play of Ben Hutton.
I misspoke. I said he's been the second best defenseman, I should say, of the group that we listed. Because I still think Ham Hughes is probably... I take Ham Hughes over Hutton right now.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously not.
Hutton has that potential to leapfrog him as early as next season if they were to be playing together, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And Hamhuis has been playing very well for a very bad team, unfortunately.
Let's use that as a segue into Nikita Trampkin.
Sure.
Obviously, the big Russian has made his way over to Vancouver after spending the last few years in the KHL. I mean, this guy was a third-round pick back in 2014. It was, again, one of Benning's first picks as general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. And it, I feel like as soon as he touched down, as soon as the wheels touched down in Vancouver, people are throwing the Zdeno Chara label around here. Is it justified at all? Do you think Trampkin is worth the hype?
That's the thing. I know so little about him that I can't really say anything until I see him play. And obviously, you know, I think even Chara said that, you know, when he first played, it was a struggle, and it's going to be a big adjustment. Obviously, he's got the size to maybe make up for some of the things that he's going to be a bit slower on, but, you know, it's not going to be, you know, he's not going to be a revelation. It's going to be a project, I think.
Everything we've seen or at least read about him so far seems to indicate that this is a guy who's not afraid to use his size. Again, 6'8", I believe it was, 240 pounds.
That's a big boy.
And I think Ray Ferraro said that he has a very hard shot. It's just inaccurate at this point. So there are some sort of similarities between him and Zdeno Chara, but to get from there to there seems like an awful long stretch. So how quickly does Nikita Trampkin get into the lineup if you're Willie Desjardins?
I mean, I would like to see him in as soon as possible. I don't see what the harm is in taking out a guy like Bartkowski right now.
Who's not going to be part of your lineup next season.
No, and he's not contributing anything positive to the team right now either.
When has he ever contributed anything positive to the team?
Well, as his mom did, so we'll give him that.
Wow. Well, the Nikita Trampkin, I think we can both definitely agree that he should be getting into the lineup pretty soon here. I mean, do you think it's a week from now maybe that he gets in as soon as he's sort of acclimated? Yeah, acclimated to Vancouver, to the lineup, to the system that they're trying to implement on the blue line. I feel like that's the sort of timetable you're looking at.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the Canucks' schedule as a result here, I mean, I know that they're playing Winnipeg tonight. You're going to the game.
Sure am.
I don't think you see him tonight against Winnipeg for sure, but perhaps a St. Louis home tilt next Saturday?
He could. I think it would make sense for him to get his first game at home.
Right? It would seem a little early to get him in to the Wednesday game against Colorado at home. I don't think you put him out there on the road against Edmonton on Friday, but perhaps the night after coming off a back-to-back, you sit down a Matt Bartkowski or even a Lucas Spezza and say, let's get Nikita Trampkin into the lineup.
Yeah.
They're not sitting Spezza.
No, I thought it was a good joke.
Is that why you laughed?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought I'd bring some comedy to the show. But Nikita Trampkin, he will be a part of the lineup next season, or do you see him going back to the KHL?
With all this hype and talk about him, it's hard to see him not at least starting the season in Vancouver.
Wearing 88, by the way.
Yeah,
well, we could have used him on episode 88 yesterday.
Well,
would have been the Nikita Trampkin episode right away.
Last week, you mean?
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Another note to pass along here in terms of people that are over across the pond that are Canuck property. Anton Rodin winning the Swedish Hockey League MVP honors. Do you remember Anton Rodin?
I do. What was it, 2009?
I think it was the 2008 draft with Cody Hodgson. He was the second round pick.
Yeah.
And he was there. What was the Canucks farm affiliate back then before it was Utica?
Manitoba?
Was it Manitoba? No, I think there was someone after that.
It was Manitoba Moose and Chicago Wolves.
That's it. He was with the Chicago Wolves. Didn't really pan out. Didn't really get much of a chance in Vancouver. Then the guy goes out to the Swedish Hockey League, wins a couple MVP awards, and all of a sudden he's back into the equation. And obviously it was apparently justification for the Canucks trading Hunter Shinkarik for Marcus Granlund. Apparently.
Was it?
Exactly what Benning said, was that they felt better about making the deal knowing that they had Anton Rodin coming back into the fold.
Well, I mean, it does make sense.
I don't know. I mean, are you willing to buy the hype? Because we've seen those kind of players migrate over from Europe with very limited to no success in the NHL.
Yeah. I mean,
are you going to give Anton Rodin the benefit of the doubt?
It's hard to do that, really, with any Canuck prospect, just because we've seen so many of them flounder, especially in the Gillis era. But I think it's worth a shot. You know, if he is putting up numbers anywhere, if he does have that skill that Vancouver is clearly lacking, then he's definitely worth a long look.
All right. Well, I mean, if we're running down pure statistics, the season that he had with Brynäs this year, he had 37 points in 33 games. The year prior with that, 40 in 54. But when he was with the Chicago Wolves, he had 27 points in 62 games one season, just 14 in 49 the next. Not exactly screaming out success in my mind.
No.
By the way, you were right. He was drafted in the Jordan Schrader draft in 2009, so I apologize on that.
That's quite all right. And that's what is kind of worrisome, is that he has tried the North American game and kind of failed at it. maybe not failed, but didn't excel or didn't produce like we would hope he would. Maybe he's figured it out. I don't know.
Do you think sometimes things like homesickness plays a factor in this? Because when you're a young kid and you come over from Sweden towards North America to try and start a professional career in North America, sometimes as a kid you miss, you know, home, you miss your parents, and then you go back to Europe and then you come back and you're a little bit older and suddenly everything just seems to click. So maybe that's what Jim Benning and management are hoping comes out of Rodin?
Yeah, maybe. And even when he was drafted, you know, one of the knocks on him was that he was a small, scrawny kid. Maybe he's just filled out more, maybe a little more physically mature. Who knows?
Yeah.
Lots of factors in play here.
Do they even have him signed, though? Like, I don't feel like it's signed, sealed, and delivered just yet.
No, I think it's one of those things that's kind of a matter of time, the way Benning's talking about it. So we'll see. But, I'm not too worried about it.
All right. Anything else you wanted to talk about before we get into the rest of the tank watch and the draft picks?
Do we want to talk about Frozen Four or anything like that?
Brock Besser in the University of North Dakota, having a phenomenal season, by the way. Like, how anxious are you to get Brock Besser into your lineup?
If you're
the Vancouver Canucks.
I can give him another year. He's still, what, 18?
Yep.
And really see what he can do, see if he can just really dominate the college game. Obviously, you want to get him signed sooner rather than later, but I don't think that's a concern with Besser.
You've seen the highlights of him. We've seen the shot that this guy has. You see the comparisons of his rookie season to guys like Zach Parise and TJ Oshie. And
Jonathan Toews, even.
And how hard is it not to get your hopes up when you see him compared to guys like that?
It's really hard. Like, watching the highlights, if he were on the team right now, he'd have the best shot on the Vancouver Canucks.
You think
so? There's no doubt in my mind. I don't know who would have a better shot. It's
Virtanen?
Vertanen's got a really good heavy shot, but I've never seen a kid with a shot like Besser's.
All right, fair enough. Will Thatcher Demko and Boston College be part of the Frozen Four at all? Do we know?
I don't know if the Frozen Four has actually been announced yet. I'm not too sure.
How cool would it be to somehow, I don't know how this would work exactly, but to see Demko go up against Besser?
Yeah, that'd be. I don't know who I'd root for.
It's like rooting between two of your kids.
Yeah.
I don't know who to root for.
Speaking of getting player signed, you really hope
that better get done.
Demko signed, and I think Drantz put up a good article on Sportsnet.
The exact quote from Benning in that Thomas Drantz article was that apparently because Demko is from California, he loves the West Coast. He would like to play on the West Coast. He even mentioned that he's best friends with Jared McCann. So they say it's a matter of time. But you know what? When you see the kind of numbers that Demko is putting up in NCAA, you're like, well, they better get this guy signed, sealed, and delivered, because we've seen guys in the NCAA bolt and go unsigned and pick whoever they want to play with in the NHL.
Yeah, and I haven't seen any indication that Demko would go that route. He seemed pretty happy with the Canucks' experience so far, and I think he's got a pretty clear opportunity to step in and be the goalie of the future. So I'm not worried yet. I'm just a little anxious.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, coming up, we will get into Team Tank very briefly, see where the Canucks stand in the NHL standings. We will also talk about what we would do if the Vancouver Canucks were to draft today. All coming up here on the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
If that's how we're going to battle, we're not going to have a chance to win.
You can do it!
So shit's not going right. F***ing get your heads out of your and make it work by outworking the opposition.
Oh no! We suck again!
They think we're playing good, but they have no idea how we're going to come here. Forwards are getting to the offensive zone. Let's grind these bitches down here, hey?
We just sucked.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
No, they're saying Boo Earns. Boo Earns.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've just lost the picture, but what we've seen speaks for itself.
Adam, I have bad news.
What's that?
With that win, the Canucks leapfrogged Buffalo in the standings last night.
Well, it's a matter of time. They have three games in hand now?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You've been watching the standings very closely, haven't
very
you?
Very closely. Every day. Every
you
day.
Know what agonizes
Toronto,
me?
Toronto won last night against Detroit.
Don't even get me started. Is that it feels like every time the Canucks play, something goes their way where teams around them win and there's this golden opportunity for the Canucks to make up some ground in the tank. And then the Canucks do a disservice and win themselves.
Oh, they like the winning the game against Arizona was a tragedy.
They should not have won that game.
It was, and I texted
saying,
this to you after
I'm not
the
saying
game.
They morally should not have won. It's that they should not have won that game. So annoying.
Yeah, and but I mean I said this to you after the game. It was the most useless win I can think of. Like, it did no good other than maybe boost some confidence in the kids, right? Like, a loss against Arizona would have been huge in the standings.
Yeah, but on some level, does it not bring you some relief seeing that, like, the winning goal was Vertanen to Granlund?
Yeah, and that's the only real benefit. When I see somebody like Dorsett score, yeah, I get, like, visibly angry.
Like, what does it prove? What does it do for us?
No.
Like, when Matt Barkowski, when Lucas Spezza scored the other night, I'm thinking to myself, oh, great. Lucas Spezza scored. That adds value to this
but
team's rebuild.
That goal was all Ben Hutton, though, which was the positive. You just got to look at it. Get past the score sheet, man.
I just get frustrated seeing that the Canucks have won 3 of their last 4, and I think to myself, man, the Canucks could really not use those 6 points, because if they didn't win, have those 6 points in their back pocket, guess where they'd be? 29th in the NHL.
Yeah.
They'd be 29th.
Well, and they
and just 3 points back of Toronto.
They have 12 overtime losses.
Yep.
That's a big 12
points. Just split the difference there.
Yeah, that's another 6 points.
Either way, the Canucks have 15 games to make their way into somehow the top five in my mind. The top five seems to be the most reasonable goal.
Top five would be great. You get a decent shot at moving up,
mm-hmm,
either to first, second, or third. And if you don't, one of those defensemen will be there, and Benning clearly seems to like them.
Okay. Before we get into prospects, let's do one NHL lottery simulation and see if the season were to end today, who would pick first, second, and third? Okay.
Should we throw this out to the fans and ask them if they want us to do that live? Or not live, but recorded lottery.
We should Periscope the actual lottery and our reactions on the podcast,
or even just record it and then put it in another.
We could do
podcast.
That. We could. Periscope. Have you used Periscope? Periscope's fantastic.
I have not used it.
We'll use Periscope.
Okay.
Okay, but I'll pick the winner here on this one. Oh, what? Okay, that's not right. I'm gonna press reset.
Who was it?
Colorado.
Oh, that's no fun.
Like, how does that even happen? Colorado's like 10th in the standings. Okay, I'm going to pick another one. Oh, you're not going to like this one either.
Edmonton?
Yes.
Ugh.
Okay, I'm picking again. All right, I'll settle for that one.
What?
Arizona.
Okay.
Hey!
Vancouver's
guess who's
third?
Third?
There you go. If only.
Wow.
Give me Puljujarvi, please.
Give me Lane.
Well, yeah, but it's probably going to be Lane going second.
You think so?
Yeah.
It would be close in my mind. I think it depends on the team needs. Anyway, let's get into if the draft were today. I mean, the Canucks essentially looking at 23rd in the NHL standings. Hang on, 29, 28, 27, 26. 24th. So if everything went according to plan as it should in a draft lottery, the Canucks would be picking 7th right now. Now, it seems to be, according to a Jim Benning interview, that there's the top three players, Austin Matthews, Jesse Puljujarvi, and Patrick Laine, and then there's the rest of the field in terms of forwards, right? And then for him, he seems to seem hell-bent on picking a defenseman if he can't get one of those three.
Even then, I think, you know, the way he worded it, yeah, he wants to take a defenseman if, like you said, all things being equal. But I still think he's looking at the best player available approach. If he sees a guy like Tkachuk rated a heck of a lot higher than a guy like Chychrun, he's probably going to still take him.
Okay, so let's say hypothetically here that the Vancouver Canucks are in a position to take one of those top three players, Matthews, Puljujarvi, and Laine. For Benning, in your mind, how do you think he ranks those three?
Well, I think Matthews is undisputed at the top.
Sure.
Then after that, I don't know. That's win-win.
It does seem like splitting hairs a little bit. I mean, for you, I feel, again, like we've talked about, Laine seems to have that game-breaking ability, but Puljujarvi might be the kind of guy who makes players around him better as well, as a better all-around game.
Yeah.
So if that were to be the case, who do you think he would value more?
I think you would want the Lane.
I think you would want Lane too.
You want that game-breaking ability, right? And the more
like
I've
Lane
read,
would look fantastic on a line with Jared McCann, let's say, down the road.
The more I've read about this draft, the more I've heard people push Lane into the conversation more with Matthews mm-hmm. than with Puljujärvi.
Yeah, and I think I saw TSN Bob McKenzie's comparison of Lane to Vladimir Tarasenko.
Ooh.
Which it would be very hard to pass up if you're the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah.
So I think it goes Lane and then Puljujärvi. But again, I do like both of those players for the Vancouver Canucks. So this is where it gets tricky, because if Benning seems to say he can't get one of those three, he might steer towards a defenseman, like you said, maybe, or he might go best player available. So I'll rattle off players and you tell me who would you rather have, that player or Jacob Chychrun, who seems to be the odds-on favorite of the first defenseman going forward. Matt Tkachuk or Jacob Chychrun?
Tkachuk.
I'll agree. Begrudgingly, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't love Matt Tkachuk as much as I love, say, one of the Finns or the Swedes, or the Swedes, or Austin Matthews. But I mean, you can't ignore the fact that the Canucks need a defenseman in their pipeline.
No, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I still think
you would take Tkachuk.
Yes, I just think there's, I mean, as good as Chychrun has been,
mm-hmm.
there still are a few questions, more questions about him than there are about Tkachuk.
Okay. Chychrun or Alexander Nylander, of course, the brother of William Nylander.
I would probably go Chychrun.
Okay. So that's sort of where he falls in that five range for him?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think I agree as well. Do you think that a Columbus or a Winnipeg who were in that position to take a Chychrun right now would be even wanting to take Chychrun?
Why wouldn't they?
Well, Columbus already has Zach Werenski in their pipeline.
And they've got Ryan Murray
and Seth Jones. So they do seem to be set kind of up front with regards to defensemen.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
So would it not be possible that they would be willing to gamble on Nylander at that spot at five?
Yeah, I think, you know, Columbus hasn't exactly been lighting the lamp a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they have really up front in terms of prospects. So I can't really say, but I could see them taking it forward.
We'll take a quick gander over it to see what Columbus has.
Sure. But,
I mean, I don't know. When you got Werenski, who's, you know, he's a big physical player. He represented Team USA as their captain at the World Juniors. It's hard to say, no, we're not going to build around this Werenski, Murray, Jones defensive lineup that they've got. Up front, I mean, they've got Oliver Bjorkstrand, who we know from the WHL,
mm-hmm.
Sonny Milano, who they got in, I think it was 2 years ago in the draft, Kirby Reichel they've got in their lineup already, Paul Bittner, who you and I could sort of go back and forth on, but it's a decent pipeline of players they've got up front, but it's none of them you would say is in that Alexander Nylander range.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I could definitely see Columbus making a move there. Winnipeg
has a lot of skill up front.
I mean, for me, I think Winnipeg is a team that's going to go best player available.
Yeah.
Buffalo, where do you sort of see them falling in this situation if it came to defenseman or forward?
Probably a defenseman. At least, you know, at center, they're set for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really hard
O'Reilly,
to see them.
Eichel, and Reinhardt.
It would be really tough to see them pass up on a Chychrun if he was available at that spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, otherwise, if the Canucks were to pick at seven and Chychrun or Nylander or Tkachuk were not available, there are some decent players behind them as well. I mean, where do you stand on Mikhail Sergachev, who we've seen a lot about, Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's a center, but you're very high on him as well. And, of course, there's Olli Juolevi as well, who plays at the London Knights.
Mm-hmm. I really like Juolevi. I saw him play at the
top prospects game.
Yeah, him and Dubois I saw play. And he was one of the better players on the ice, I think. Moved the puck extremely well and was really good with the puck. I also really do like Dubois, though. That guy's a, you know, a high-skill guy, puts up lots of points, can play the wing.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that's one, like Benning said, all things being equal, they would take a defenseman. I think I would go Juolevi.
Okay. I mean, I saw the talk on Juolevi as well, and I believe it was a someone, I can't remember who, maybe it was Bob McKenzie, but someone gave him a Ryan McDonagh comparison.
Oof. That's pretty sexy.
I mean, when that gets thrown around, a guy who's not going to be like fantastic at any at one particular thing, but he will be pretty good at everything.
I think Ryan McDonagh is a number one defenseman.
I mean, when I think of Ryan McDonagh, I think of what the Canucks had when they signed him in Dan Hamhuis.
Yeah, that's
you know
fair.
What I mean.
I would say McDonagh's a little more skilled than Hamhuis is.
For sure.
You know, Hamhuis is definitely a jack-of-all-trades guy, a little less offense.
And McDonagh is someone that you could sort of throw out there on the power play as well in all sort of situations.
Think, yeah, exactly.
So it'd be tough to pass that up, but Sergachev seems to be the wild card right now. A lot of people say he could move up or down.
Where does he play?
He plays defense for Windsor.
Windsor, yeah, okay.
I mean, there's a lot of hype there as well, but I think I would have... If I'm not getting Chychrun or Tkachuk, I think I would have Nylander, then Hulevi, then Dubois, then Sergachev.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty consensus top nine.
Are you happy with any of those top nine players?
Yes. Which, I've done that draft simulator thing more than a few times.
I know you have.
And Vancouver hasn't fallen lower than ninth once in any of them I've done, so I think you're getting one of those guys, and I think you can be happy with any of those nine. Obviously you'd love one of the top three guys, but if that's, you know, unrealistic, then you're still happy.
I would just like to mention that in the Canucks' current spot of being 23rd or 24th, was it 24th, that they only have a 6% chance or something like that of getting the first overall pick.
Yeah,
there's not great odds.
No.
But if you vault yourself in the top five, it's like, what, 10, 11%?
Top five? Yeah, something like that. Now, I don't remember this from elementary school, but if you have 6% chance three times, no, they're all just independent of each other, right? You don't have an 18% chance of winning one of them?
No, that's not how it works.
That's too bad.
Your math is terrible.
Well, I corrected myself midway through.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean... It's hard not to get your hopes up, but how much are you wanting to put faith that the Canucks can somehow get a top three pick?
They need to start losing. We've talked about this. These next two games against Winnipeg
are huge.
The
standings are still close.
They're so close. The only thing that is really kind of screwing the Canucks right now is they played three or four fewer games than a bunch of the teams.
Mm-hmm.
But those three games against Edmonton and those two games against Winnipeg are going to go a long way to determining where they end up.
Yeah, they've got a lot of games against against teams that are around them in the standings. Like you mentioned, Winnipeg and Edmonton are among them. But they've also still got some tough games ahead. To close out the month, they've got St. Louis, Chicago, San Jose.
They're losing at least two of those games. They are not beating Chicago.
For sure.
And
I can't see them beating St. Louis.
No, me neither.
I could see them getting one of those two San Jose games.
Yeah, if they go 25.25 the rest of the season,
mm-hmm.
I'm a happy man.
And to begin April, by the way, they're playing Anaheim and LA.
There you go. Are they on the road or at home? I guess it doesn't matter.
They're on the road for Anaheim, but they're at home to get to LA. Doesn't matter. They're going to lose to LA.
Yeah.
There's no way they beat LA.
No way they beat Anaheim.
Coming up, we have a little post-game haiku from last night's or Saturday night's game, and then we will close out the show. All coming up here on the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Garth, that was a haiku.
I don't suppose you have a haiku to share, do you, Adam?
I do not.
That's okay. I've got a couple here that Clay happened to retweet from Saturday's game. This one comes from Brian T. Klein. And you'll appreciate this one. Just like the Canucks... Can't even tank properly. Two wins we don't need.
Yeah.
That sums up my thoughts over the last week or so. I don't know about you guys.
Use that to end the show when we get a walk.
We
out.
Really should have. This one comes from Larry Wong at LarryWong84. He says
friend
in this one.
Show?
Yeah, that's right. 15 games to go. Vertanen fights with Forsberg. Predators were preyed. I don't know how much I want Jake Virtanen fighting, by the way.
No, and I mean, that wasn't like a dust-up off the face-off or anything like that. It was kind of spur of the moment, so I don't mind it too much. But, I mean, he's going to beat Philip Forsberg in a fight any day of the week.
Yeah, anyone can beat Philip Forsberg
exactly.
in a fight. I just felt like there was nothing to prove.
Like, use your physical game, throw some big hits, which he has been. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. I'm not one for fighting in the game anymore.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, you don't want to risk Vertanen, you know.
Pulling a McDavid and breaking his hand?
Yeah, exactly. So that's how I feel about it. But I just don't think he should be fighting at this stage in his career. You know what it reminded me of a little bit? It reminded me of the time when Ryan Kesler fought Jerome Iginla in his rookie season.
That was pretty fun, though.
I know, but I was like scared for Ryan Kesler because he was just a rookie going up against a grizzled fighting veteran like Jerome Iginla at the time.
I know, but I mean, there are like, who cares about a fight against Philip Forsberg in a game against Nashville in a lost season? But you know, like that Le Cavalier Iginla fight in the finals way back when, that was a hell of a good time. And seeing, you know, Kesler fight Iginla, like there are fights that have some value, but the one against Forsberg did not.
All right, well, anytime you want to send us your haiku submissions, please do so. You can always hashtag those puppies at hashtag CHBHaiku. We welcome those additions anytime. Just going through Clayton's timeline here, by the way. Did you know his son, Jake, just won the silver medal in bowling for Bantam, I believe it was?
Good for him.
How good is your bowling? Because my bowling is not good at all.
it's not good. I don't know. I can hit 100 consistently.
Oh, see, even I'm like... I would say I'm a 50-50 shot to hit 100.
Really?
It's pretty bad.
But, yeah, that's what... And only in 10-pin. 5-pin is not a real game.
Oh, yeah, 5-pin is not a real game whatsoever.
It's too hard.
The other thing I noticed on Chris's timeline, he's got a hole in his roof.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
That doesn't look good.
Meanwhile, we're just having a good time in studio, you and I.
Jake Virtanen and Bo Horvat lighting it up in studio, and then there's Brandon Prust and Chris Higgins toiling away.
Speaking of Jake Virtanen lighting it up, how about him hanging out with the Biebs?
Yeah, what is going on with that?
I don't know
how much I like that.
Hey, I don't know. I don't care. Have some fun.
Do you think that's good for his development at all?
I don't know why. I don't think it has anything to do with his development. Maybe. I loved on Twitter, though, all these people are sending out... You know, all these JB fan accounts are like Vertanen, or sorry, Bieber with a fan in Vancouver.
Yeah, I
and
saw that.
A picture of Vertanen.
And then I think they have like hockey player put in brackets or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, a few
it's
of them
really
did.
Funny. Anything else to add before we go here on episode 89, Adam?
No, I think I've said all I needed to say.
I mean, they've got the Avalanche coming up. No, they don't have the Avalanche coming up. They have the Jets coming up first tonight. At home, you're going to that game. Then they've got the Avalanche, Oilers, and Blues. If you're Team Tank, how many of those do you think the Canucks can win?
2.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The Jets are a pretty bad team, too.
I know. Should I wear my Jets jersey so I can actively cheer against Vancouver?
Well, the fact is you've been actively cheering against Vancouver for weeks, and they just seem to keep winning games. So maybe you should wear the Canucks game and put your faith back into the Canucks so they can let you down.
Yes, they are good at
it's
that.
It's some reversed psychology. I mean, for me, I want to optimistically say that they can lose 3 of those 4 games.
Yeah?
They'll get shellacked by the Oilers, I think, and Connor McDavid.
Oh, God, I want
to say St. Louis will do a favor. And then it'll be a toss-up between the Winnipeg and Avalanche games.
Yeah, fair.
Fair enough. Well, anytime you want to reach out to us, you can reach out to us on Twitter. You can find me at MattLee980 or at AdamFOC on Twitter.
The F stands for Francis.
Thank you. Or you can always tweet Chris Golden at LightForce or Clayton Emo. He's a guest contributor at Canuck Clay. Feel free to tweet him and talk about his irregularities on the C4 podcast. Anytime, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Canucks Hockey as well. We're also on Facebook at C4 Canucks Hockey Blog Podcast or something like that. I can't even remember what it was.
Way to get the fans involved, Matt.
With all that said, we're out.
Thanks for listening to the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com.